Amen. Feels like it's been about a month and a half since I've been up here talking to you guys. But it's not. The meeting, and then we were out of town for my little brother's wedding, and then coming back. You know, those fun days that a nine-hour drive turns into about 11 and a half hours, and the rain, and yeah, all that fun stuff. So I'd much rather have been here. So, we're on lesson 20. So just to fill you in, we are in a bit of a pickle in that we have three lessons left and two classes, including tonight. So if anybody really wants me to teach either lesson 21 or 22, if you just look at the titles and you think, yeah, that one would be good. I definitely want to hear that. Or I really don't care to hear that one. Feel free to say that, and I will sort of, I'm fine doing either one. I think either one would be a great capstone to the class. But if there's one you really want to hear and you really care enough to come tell me that, I will totally make sure I focus on that. But if more people come to tell me one, sorry, I won't pick yours. So feel free to do that. I feel really loud. Is it really way up there, or am I just being really loud? There we go. So we are on lesson 20. You don't get to pick this one because this is one we are doing. And lesson 20 is in the tend section. Okay? And so tend, it's one of those words that if you say it more than three or four times, it loses all meaning whatsoever to you. So what does it mean to tend to something? Maintain it, okay. Anything else? Maintain's a good one. Care for, okay. Another good vocabulary strategy, just in case you want to know. If you can't think of a good way to say what it means, what is the opposite of tending? Ignore. Yeah, okay. When you think about the opposites of words, it actually helps you solidify their meaning a little better in your mind. So yeah, tending is to care for, to look after, to take care of. It is the opposite of ignoring or leaving alone or just leaving it something to its own devices so it may fall apart. And I think it's an excellent way to end this book because it really is this book about growing our zeal, growing our desire to please God. Is we can do all this stuff, but if we get all the way through that process and we don't take care of it, we ignore everything we did, why did we even start in the first place? So this is a good ending. So going back to the fire analogy we had there, okay? When Steve and I went out and did some hiking the other night, a couple months back, we were cutting up all the trees, and I reached over to grab this stick and throw it into the fire, and he said, no, that's the poking stick. Don't do that. And I said, how do you know it's the poking stick? He goes, look at it. It's got a good angle. Like, you don't have to get too far. It's got a good little heft to it. And I said, okay, so don't burn the poking stick. So what do you use the poking stick for? Stir the fire, right? When it's too hot, you can't just reach right in there and, like, move the logs, even though some of us guys will try to do that. Oh, it doesn't hurt too much, and your hand's half burnt off. So you use it to stir the fire a little bit. You readjust your logs so you get the right airflow. And so this tend unit is that poking stick, right? This is that stick we're going to use, that tending, that we're going to tend our zeal with. And we're going to get some habits and some tools that we can use. Because it also, in the book, he talks about the fireplace. We had a fireplace in our house growing up, and we hardly ever had fires. But we had, like, the billows thing, you know, where you, really what we did with it was fun. When somebody fell asleep on the couch, you'd into their mouth, and they'd wake up real quick. And then you had the poking stick, and then sometimes you had that fancy, like, little long dustpan on a stick that nobody ever used, right? But the poking stick is important because it lets you stir things up, right? It lets you get things settled a little bit to where they need to be. Because it's amazing. If you've ever been camping, you can have a fire that's just half dead, about to go out, and if you reach in there with that poking stick and you move it just a little bit, what happens? Right back to life, right? And if you're lucky, when you wake up in the morning, you can stir it just right and get some leaves and some tinder on there, and it'll right back up, right? And it's really useful. So think of it that way. That's the analogy you want to sort of keep in our mind, that we're coming up with some tools.
Another word for my tent was a poker.
A poker, yeah. Yeah. It's that the tool, it has the weird-looking, like, hook on the end and one on the bottom. So, but it was always so big, you could never really hook things with it, so... yeah, excellent. So our goal, we got a goal. By the way, if you did not get a handout, there are actually two handouts in the back. And I'm going to get to the first one is a normal handout. The second one is something we're going to talk about at the very end. If you need that, I am sure there are some gentlemen sitting in the back who are sort of glaring at me right now that would love to help you, named John Whitaker. And, oh, actually two other strong young men volunteered. So if you need a handout, feel free to raise your hand. They're back there. They'll bring you one. But we're going to move on pretty quick because I got a lot to talk about. So our goal is learn ways to adjust our habits to tend to our zeal. Okay? And I want to point out an important word in this section. Adjust. Okay? This lesson, we are not necessarily looking to develop anything new. We are looking to take the things that we already have and just shift it just a little bit so that we adjust it to get there, right? It's that I love to cook, and one of my favorite things is when you find the sweet spot on the burner and the eggs are just right, and you're like, oh, yeah, perfect. And you sort of know, right? And if, once you move and get a new stove, you've got to figure it out again. That's awful. But we're looking just to make that little minute adjustment to some of the things we already do and some of the things that we are already really probably might even be pretty good at. But how can we adjust those? Okay? Thank you, gentlemen, for helping. I appreciate that. So that's our goal. Anybody got anything before I jump into this? I'm going to tell you right now, too. This is one of my disagreements with the book. He starts with the great habits. So if you looked at your lesson, and I know all of you all pored over it very rigorously over the last few days, he starts with the great habits, and then he goes to the toxic habits. I don't like that. I didn't want to end on like the negative downer stuff, and so I flip-flopped it. So if I start talking, I did not skip the great habits. We're going to talk about the toxic habits first. There's some on both sides. Okay, so let's get going about great habits and toxic habits. So habits can be good or bad, correct? Do we agree with that? You can have a good habit and you can have a bad habit. You can have a good habit that you get up every morning and you go for a jog or a run, or you're one of those weird people that likes to do that. Or you can have a bad habit where you get up every morning and you eat a handful of Chips Ahoy cookies. Both of those are habits. They both have very different results. Okay? So remember that as we go through this, that we're going to talk about our toxic habits first, and then we're going to circle back to our great habits. So if you don't get too confused about that. So first toxic habit we're going to talk about, it's over on the top. If you want to keep along in your book, it's on the very top of page 100, is stay away from evil and vain pursuits. Okay? What does that mean? What are evil and vain pursuits? Anybody else need one while Dave's still up and around? Great, thanks. What is an evil and a vain pursuit?
Things that we should not pursue.
Yeah, things we shouldn't pursue. I think that is one of those things that we can go ahead and all agree on, is that we should not pursue evil. Okay? That is a fundamental Bible truth that is really easy to accept. Evil is bad. Okay? You don't take anything else out of this, just know that evil's bad. And we probably shouldn't pursue it. And so 1 Corinthians 3:3 talks about that, and it is going to be up here if you want to just look up there. Actually, after I give you this point. Zeal and envy are related, okay? And the best way to talk about this is to tell you that zeal and envy are sometimes translated from the same word. It's just in the context of what it means. Are we excited, or are we pushing to please God, or are we being envious of other situations? So zealous is the word, and it's translated both ways. So got a point over here from LR. Let me share. No, you're good.
I like how he's not only points it out as evil, but vain, which is empty. And of course, we use our word vanity, meaning to indulge in something that we think is alluring. And evil can be attractive, but it's always empty. And I like how he does that.
Yeah, I think that's important because you can have pursuits that are evil, or you can have pursuits that are vain, but sometimes they can be different. You can have a pursuit that just is an empty pursuit versus it may not be evil per se, but it just may be useless, or it may be something that isn't profitable and something we should be really taking time on. So 1 Corinthians 3:3, you are still worldly, for since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere humans? Okay, so what, anybody know, what do they say after this? For some of you say, I am of Paul, and some of you say, I'm of Apollos, and are you not acting like humans? So what is, I mean, how does this verse really tie into that vanity, that idea of pursuing useless or evil things? Took me a second to think about, too. What do you think? I'm going to throw this one. Are you not still worldly, since there is jealousy and quarreling? If there is anything that is evil and or vain, it is quarreling and jealousy among us, okay? Or even among us and other people. The quarreling gives the idea of what? That it is a negative experience, right? It's not a reasoning together sort of thing. It is negative, it is ugly, it is bad, and it doesn't get you anywhere, right? And so that arguing or that envy or that jealousy that we display, it's not worth it, right? It is a habit that we can get out of. And I will admit, I like to debate, I like to argue, I like to put an idea on the table and see what everybody thinks about it and then poke holes in each other's arguments. I love to do that, right? And that's well and good when it is with people who are also enjoying that, right? And so would I call that quarrelsome? No, but I have to be careful that I don't get into that habit with everybody I talk to, right? Because I work with 13 and 14-year-olds, and if I don't poke holes in their arguments, they say some really silly stuff, and I don't ever get to teach them anything. And so when I go home and I talk to Aaron, I have to be careful not to keep that up and say, well, did you really think about this? Or I try to use guiding questions, and I'll just say, did you really just try to guiding question me? I'm like, maybe. So anything on that one? That's a pretty easy one. I mean, if we had to boil it down to our language and not the big words he's trying to use for a book, don't do bad stuff and don't do useless stuff. Anybody got a point? Am I good? Excellent. Okay, so stay away from zeal for mere traditions. Traditions, I've talked about them a few times. It's always hard to talk about traditions because we love traditions, right? Our biggest memories as human beings is we think back to all the big holidays and those holiday traditions, right? And one of those, like, coming-of-age things is when you stop doing that Christmas tradition that you did for so long as a kid, right? I know when Aaron and I got married, we were like, okay, how are we going to work this all out? How are we going to do Christmas, right? Are we going to go to my parents' house? Are we going to go to Mike and Janet's house? Are we going to mix and match? How are we going to do this? And it was weird for me because that was the first year we didn't go to my grandma and grandfather's house. And it was just like that tradition sort of fell apart, and it was like, shook me a little bit, right? I'm back on. I don't know if my battery's died or I just hit the button. But we love our traditions, right? We love those traditions. We find comfort in the ritual of traditions. But we can also get zeal from those traditions and think that they are doing things for us that they really aren't, right? And that they are... And quick change. There you go. You don't mind. Do that. We like those traditions because there are things that we can do and there are things that we find solace in. And when we change things up, like I mentioned a couple month or so back about when we change service times or we change the order, we just get a little like, whew. How's that? That's not scriptural. Anybody ever be on vacation and we always joke, hey, what time does church start? And they say, oh, it starts at 10:30. And we're like, oh, that's not scriptural. Because I know we joke like that, but we find comfort in that regularness. And so when we are zealous for mere traditions, it's, are we tied to the traditions or are we tied to the scriptural reasoning behind them? And I think he uses a good example in Matthew 11, 28-30. Switch again. Would definitely not make a good NASCAR pit team, because that was not a good switch. But excellent work on the batteries, John. Appreciate it. Matthew 11:28-30. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Really easy comprehension question. Who are we supposed to be yoked to? Christ. Okay? And he makes the point in the book that I think is very important, that we are yoked to Christ. We are yoked to the gospel. We are not yoked to our traditions. Now, let me go ahead and throw the disclaimer I always throw out there. If we have a tradition that has a scriptural basis, I believe that tradition should stand. But if we have a tradition that is more of an idea area or a we have a freedom of conscience with it a little bit, I believe that if we choose to continue that tradition to the detriment of the spread of the gospel, we are making the wrong choice. And it's very hard because we don't want to give up some of our traditions. But I think it makes a good point here that we are yoked to Christ and we are yoked to the gospel. Make sense? Am I getting more elegant way to say that than I do, or eloquent way? So 1 Corinthians 9:22 also has a good point to this as well. That's the verse where it says specifically, what anybody know what it says off the top of their head while I'm walking over here, John? I became what? All things to all men. So we're going to get John's point, and then I'm going to come back.
What I do from myself is I asked, what would Christ do? And that keeps me focused.
Excellent point. Yeah, and that's as cliche as those bracelets came, what would Christ do? And there's a new version of them. I didn't know this, but it's it says he would love first, H-W-L-F. So it's sort of an extension of the what would Jesus do bracelets that were when I was in school. 20-something years ago. So it's sort of reiterated itself as something else, and it's he would love first, which I like because instead of just asking somebody a question, saying, hey, this is what would happen. So yeah, go ahead. Got you, Dwight.
Sometime back, I don't know if the kids still do it or not, but they have WWJD.
Yeah, the bracelets.
What would
yep.
Jesus do? Have a bracelet. Yep.
Yeah, and that's they're good reminders. Back to the 1 Corinthians 9:22, he became all things to all people. He was willing to change himself. To the Greeks, I became a Greek. To the Jew, I became Jews. I became a Jew. To those without the law, I became as one, what? Without the law. And he became all things to all people because Paul understands what? What is his purpose? Is his purpose to follow every tradition, to follow every step of the way, exactly the way that he wants to do it? No, he understands that the process for him is to win souls, to spread the gospel, okay? And to do that, we have to change a little bit of ourselves. If we are so uncomfortable that we cannot change, that is some serious introspection that we need to do for ourselves, okay? Anybody? Points, questions, ideas? Great. Next one, stay away from rash commitments. That's going to be our third toxic habit. So stay away from rash commitments. If y'all know me very well, you know that I'm very reserved. I don't speak out a lot. I don't say things very quickly off the cuff. I really don't. I'm totally being sarcastic here. But slow down. And by rash commitments, the story that he brings up and everybody always brings up, Jephthah, was it Jephthah? I don't remember. It's in the book. I guess I could look. Jephthah says, you know what, Lord, thank you, this is amazing, I appreciate it, I'm going to sacrifice. First thing comes out and sees me when I get home. And I don't know if he had like a beloved pet that he thought was going to come out first, like a dog or a goat, I don't know. But what comes out to meet him first? His daughter. And he goes, And then obviously she says, hey, you have to follow through with it, give me some time, and then I'll come back. And he goes through with it. But that is a perfect story to avoid rash commitments. And not that I'm expecting any of you all to make a promise that you're going to sacrifice whatever comes to greet you first at the door when you get home. But when we think about, you know what, do I want to say I'm going to do this? Do I want to say I'm going to do that? Without really considering the whole process, right? As much as I want everybody in here to start to teach, because I think teaching is one of the best ways to learn yourself, it's a commitment. When you sign up to teach here, it's it can be a commitment. LR, how long do you think you prep for a class, a single class? Yeah, so for this class, I didn't get as much because we traveled, and it was about 4.5 hours. It's a commitment. And so before you commit to something like that, think it through, right? Because it's better that you say, no, I can't do that, than to do it poorly, okay? Or to do it with a bad attitude. Would you all agree or disagree with that? I think so, too. When we talked about it a while back, we talked about if there's just things that don't appeal to you to do and you're just going to be a jerk about it the whole time, it's better you just don't do that and find something else. As long as it's not one of your required actions, find something else that you can do that you can actually, because as much as we've said it, zeal is what? Starts with a C. We've been talking about lots while we wear masks. Zeal is contagious. Thank you. See, I didn't want to have to use my bad, like trying to get y'all to guess things. So it's contagious. So if you have a bad attitude when you go about something, it's just as contagious as if you had a good attitude when you do it. So think about that. So yeah, slow down. If you get asked to do something big or you're thinking you want to do something big, don't jump at it and say, yeah, I'm going to do this, 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 then this, right? Maybe slow down for a second. Think through the ideas. Think before you respond is the same thing. Think through what you're about to say. Think about the time commitment. Think about the ideas behind what you're going to do. Don't get distracted by the new shiny that we've talked about 1,000 times, right? Because it can be a lot. So Matthew 12:36. I think I put it up there. Yeah, there we go. Matthew 12:36. But I tell you that everyone will be given account on the day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken. What's the other word instead of empty? Some translations use. What? Vain or rash, right? The rash words that you speak. So the things that you speak without thinking it through. And that's hard because sometimes as people, we just want to respond, right? We want to say something. We want to say yes because we don't want to let anybody down. Or we want to make a point that really just doesn't matter. And I think this speaks to both of those. Not just the volunteering to do a lot of extra stuff that you may or may not have time for. And also saying a lot of stuff that just sort of means nothing just because you want to talk, right? And I think that's a good habit. Anybody question? Anybody? There's a poster I've seen in a classroom. I'm trying to remember what it says. So as you go, before something passes through your mouth, make sure, is it true? Is it helpful? Is it, I can't think of the other words.
It may be who you're trying to impress.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah, and that's something else you can think. And that goes back to our motivation, right? Are you doing this because you love Christ, you love God, and you want to be more zealous, or are you doing this because you want these people to think that you're better? And that's sort of a hard thing to think about. And we'll talk about that, I believe, maybe on this next one. Okay, the fourth toxic thing, and I'm going to zip through this pretty quick. Stay away from acting on your own assumptions, okay? It is very easy as you become more intelligent and smarter and deeper in the faith and learning more about the Bible to assume that you know a whole lot of stuff about a whole lot of stuff, right? It's very easy because we have heard, I don't know how many sermons a year. We hear, what, 52 times 2, so 104 sermons a year. And then some of you all are a little riper than the rest of us, and so you've heard multiple years of sermons. And we like to think, oh, I know this, I know this, I know this. And when we get that assumption that our way and the way we think about something is the only way to think about something, we can fall into the trap really bad. David and Nathan sort of did that, right? David wanted to do what? He wanted to build the temple. And Nathan told him what? Do it. I'm sure God will be okay with it. And real quick, they figured out that they did not have the authority to do that, right? And he said, hey, guys, how about you stop? Because it's not your job. This is saved for somebody else. Why'd they tell him to stop? Why couldn't David do it? Too much blood on his hands, right? So that's something we got to think about. And this goes back to our own assumptions. You know what? I'm going to do this because I assume we have the authority to do it. And really, that's a dangerous precedent to set. You should really be looking, do we have the authority? Do I have the authority to do X, Y, Z versus not doing X, Y, Z?
And you're right. Sometimes on authority we get the misshapen idea that if I don't do it, it doesn't get done.
Yeah, and that's a pretty dangerous thought, because it can lead to, you know what, I did it, but I didn't know about this, this, and this that I should have known about to make sure it was effective, and so what I did was ineffective, and somebody was actually about to start doing that anyways, right? So yeah, that's a big one. So stay away from your own assumptions, and I got to get moving because I'm going. Slow down again. Remember we had to slow down, right? Slow down again. Take a step back. It will not kill you to take a little while to study and understand, or even remember those partners we said to find. Find a partner. Find that Stephen that you can go to and say, Stephen, here's my plan. Poke holes in it. Be as critical as you can. I'll remind you again, if you ever want to have somebody to pick through it, and I mean this in a kind and loving way, Stephen is very analytical, and he does not mind to lovingly tell you why a plan is either not great or the ways it will fail miserably. But you'll feel good about it because it'll make you feel good. So it's a skill. No, I'm not saying he's shot down every plan I've had, but no, it is a skill, and it's a valuable skill. So I said that earlier. This class, I didn't want to just like ignore it again. So we good here? Anybody got a question or a point here? Okay. So we're going to go into the great habits now. It's not that whole sheet, but it's a different one. And I'm going to go through these pretty quick because these are pretty elementary, and I think we all do this. 10-year zeal with reminders. We need reminders. As much as we have heard 54 times 2, so 104 sermons a year, not including meetings and all the other stuff, there are some times that we need reminders about the elementary and basic principles because we get so far up here that we forget that there's stuff down here too, right? And we need to understand those basic principles. I remember we started talking about the resurrection class. People were like, why do we need to hear about resurrection again? Jesus died, he was resurrected. Okay, great. And then when we start digging in, we're like, okay, that's a whole lot of stuff there we'd never get into, right? And it was valuable, even though at the beginning we're just like, okay, is there really a whole class about that? But there was, and it was great because it reminded us of some of those foundational things, and then we built on top of those. So 2 Peter 1, 13 and 14, I think it right to refresh your memory as long as I live in the tent of this body, because I know that I will soon put it aside as our Lord Jesus Christ has made clear to me. I'm going to die, and I need you to know this stuff, right? So he's just telling them, I'm out soon, and I need to remind you of some things. And as you go through the book, that's what he's talking about the whole time. You need to hear this. We need to hear it every so often, right? You ever had a sermon start and you're like, oh, this one again, right? I'm not going to lie. I've done that before too. But it's sort of that attitude, that mindset. Oh, this one again means I might be able to find something else new about it. Or maybe it's going to be a different angle this time. Or maybe I can get something where I can dig in, right? And so that's what's great about that reminders. Okay, 10-year zeal with godly sorrow. I have tried to make sure that I've kept this as positive and upbeat because this book is positive and upbeat. This one is where I got to sort of turn it down just a little bit because 2 Corinthians 7:11, see what this godly sorrow has produced in you, with what earnestness and eagerness to clear yourselves, what indignation, what alarm, what longing, what concern, what readiness to see justice done. At every point, you have proved yourselves to be innocent in this manner. Okay? While we are called to be joyful and to love and to have happiness and spread all that around, this verse specifically calls us to look at the things that we have done and what? I'm talking too much. I'm going to let one of y'all do it. What is this calling us to do? To do better. Yeah, and when you reflect on the bad things you have done and you see them as bad things, remember, the first step in having a problem is admitting you have it, right? And part of admitting you have it is looking back at it and reflecting on it, right? And so a mistake that you learn from is a learning opportunity, right? And a sin that you learn from can be a learning opportunity. And I think if you don't learn from it, it's wasted, right? And if you really didn't learn from it, were you able to really truly repent and seek forgiveness of it? So I think this is important, that we really do reflect and we look back with godly sorrow about what we do, because it will empower us to move into greater zeal and understand our human failings and situation better. Right? Somebody agree, disagree? Comments, concerns? Yeah.
If we could flip-flop hindsight and foresight.
Oh, yeah.
We'd be a lot better off.
What's it they say? Hindsight is 20/20. You can always look back. And everything's clear in hindsight. Right? You see every step you should have taken. Can't believe I just said that. Every step you should have taken or could have taken.
We see excellent examples of this in Paul and in Peter. They made some bad choices, and it really motivated them to do better and be stronger and to have zeal. And I've kind of wondered, if Judas would have just waited 24 more hours,
yeah,
he could have been the most zealous, because he would have had the most to make up for.
Yeah. Well, and Thomas comes to mind too, right?
I'm
not going to believe unless I put my hands there. And then he's like gangbusters afterwards. Yeah. Okay. So, thanks. It is. It is important to look back. But I'm going to throw this caveat into there. Don't get drowned in it, right? Don't look back at the sin and the problems you have and let it bury you to a point where you're just like, I'm a terrible person. I can't do this. I look how many mistakes I made. Because it's easy to do. It's very easy to do, to look at all the mistakes you've made and then realize, I can't do this, right? And so look back and reflect, but remember one thing, right? What's the one thing you got to remember about those sins? They're forgiven, yeah. Okay, and that is important, because that is what reaches down and says, okay, that's there, you're out of it. Because of all the sacrifice that has been made. Okay, tend your zeal with friendly competition. Okay? So this is the third one, tend your zeal with friendly competition. Paul encourages competition in 2 Corinthians 9:2 when he tells the churches, hey, I see that you all are being, that your gratitude and you're not to be outdone by one another. So Paul's encouraging it, and I think this is one of those places that we can look at other congregations and we can talk with other congregations, and he brings up the example of preachers trying to sort of outdo each other, be a little competitive in their sermons and the sermons that they bring, and this one and that one, or deacons in active service, right? And I think that can be valuable. I think when we engage with that, Sean Ayers, who does a lot of the young people stuff over at Eastside, and I've been talking about a little bit, and we sort of throw ideas off each other, and it's sort of one-upmanship, like where like he'll say something like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do that too, but I'm gonna do this, and then he's like, yeah, but I could add this, and so it sort of like goes back and forth, and it's not that I'm trying to poke or goad him or make him feel bad, but it's sort of, we're like sort of spurring each other on to say, what could you really do, right? Because you throw a little competition into it, and we are competitive people, all right? A lot of us, most of us are probably pretty competitive, and we want to be the best at what we do. And so why wouldn't we bring a little friendly competition in, right? It also sort of gets us out of our box and our mindset of, this is how we're always going to do things. And we can learn. We can learn from what successful congregations do, right? The whole book of Revelation has examples has examples of bad and good congregations that we can learn from, right? And so I think that that idea is borne out. So who can we compete with? Whoever you want to, as long as it's friendly and not mean-spirited. Let's throw that out there. So, we have the benefit of, we have Facebook and Twitter and all these social media things where we can follow other congregations and we can see what they do. And I believe it is healthy for us to privately say, we could do that. Right? And we can sort of do a little better. And then they'll see what we're doing. Like, hey, we can do a little better. Sort of spur each other on just a little bit. Questions about that? Ideas? Great. Okay, so tend your zeal by looking to the reward. And I wish this was the last point of the book, right? because this is a big idea, right? This is something that if everything else in this book fails to get you zealous and motivated, this should motivate you to continue to stoke your zeal and to build your zeal, okay? Because we're not here just learning to be good people, right? I mean, do we become good people because of the things we do here? I'd hope so. But are we here just to be good people? No. Why are we here? To learn to go to heaven? To become qualified? Yeah, that's a great way to put it, right? We are here to make sure we're doing the right stuff. And Hebrews 11, 24 through 27 talks about that a lot. That's the faith hall of fame, right? Heroes of faith is how someone put it. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with his people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt because he was looking ahead to his reward. When all else fails, remind yourself that we have something better waiting for us. Right? I mean, is there anything else is there other motivations to be zealous and to love God and do this? Yes. But the ultimate one is this, that we have a reward and eventually we will get there, and it's hard to see it because we all want to act like we're impervious and we're not going to die at any minute. And we are not just, as one of the songs puts it, we are just not rickety collections of bones, right? And that we are moving forward to a goal, and we have a reward. Okay? Any ideas, thoughts about that one? I want to share any wisdom or insight. Excellent. Okay. So, if you want to get out the second collection, I sort of wish you had done this. If you go to number three, the question number three in the book, he talks about a guy named Chip Ingram. And Chip Ingram has a list of good habits, and I like this list. I like it enough that I made you all a handout for it, and I want you, if you look at the reflection question, it's what are you going to do with your list? I want you to take this list, and I want you to fill it out, okay? Because they're prompts. In the education world, we call those sentence starters. If a kid can't figure out how to start it, we tell them, the Declaration of Independence was... and then they go, right? So I gave you sentence starters. So I did part of the work for you. So there's no excuse not to get this done. There's 10 of them, and this can be a good conversation, or it can be filled out on your own, and then put it somewhere you're going to see it, right? And if you ever need another one, I will totally share it with you or print you some and give it back to you if you want to update your 10 lists. But these 10 things is of Christian habits. So read great books, okay? And... you can't do the cop-out answer. What's the cop-out answer? The great book you're going to read? The Bible. Yeah. So that's a great book. That's an understood that you're going to read the Bible. So what other books can you read? What books are you going to read? A book about teaching? Are you going to read a book about human communication and how you can communicate more effectively? Are you going to read books, commentary on Matthew? Are you going to dig in and deep, right? So what great books are you going to read? If you need suggestions on books... I said something bad about him, so I said something good about him. Stephen he reads a bunch. He can give you good recommendations on books. And the whole his wife's a librarian thing helps because he can tell you the Dewey Decimal System number and everything. But ask around. There are a lot of readers in this congregation, and they will give you suggestions on books. Okay, think great thoughts. And so there's I will dwell on. So what are you going to focus on? What are you going to do? And if you want to change that monthly, daily, weekly, you know what? This month I'm going to focus on being thankful. And not turn it into a sad cow about everything, okay? Next, pursue great people, right? So don't, like, chase them and hide in the bushes or anything. I will meet with. Who are the people you're going to meet with? Who are the people in this congregation that you look up to and want to be more like? Or who are the people that you would like to learn from? Schedule a lunch meeting with them. Hey, I want to go to lunch. I want to go to dinner. Let's hang out more. Let's do this. And really do that, because that habit will grow. Four, dream great dreams. And so I will long for. What do you want? What do you want to do? Okay? And Mike was talking about vision boards a couple weeks ago. what do you want? And if you write it down, it's way easier and you're way more likely to do it. Research has shown that a goal that does not get written down has like a 2% chance of happening versus a goal that you do write down, it goes up to about 70%, okay? So write it down on here. And then pray great prayers. What are you going to pray for? What are you intentionally going to pray for? And if you write it down, you're more likely to remember it, right? And it just, it lets you center your thoughts. Anybody on these first five before I go to the next? Okay. Again, take great risks. We are not risky people. We like the consistency. We do not like to go out of our way. But I'm going to step out and I'm going to do what, right? Maybe it's you're going to step out and you're going to talk to more people besides your like little cell of people in, around your pew. Or I'm going to step out and you know what? I'm going to volunteer to teach a class, right? Which I'll throw that out there again. There are plenty of people if you ever want to teach, but you don't want to do the whole thing, or if you just want somebody to coach you through it, there are plenty of us here that would love to help you with that. If it's, I know Erin has always said she would help with children's classes in the back. If it's an adult class or a high school or middle school class, we always double team those, and we would love to work with people on that kind of stuff and sort of prep you, because it can be scary. There's a whole bunch of eyeballs pointing at me right now, but you are way less judgmental than eighth graders. So that's one I'll throw out there as a risk. If you want to learn to teach, and you may do it and think that you just don't want to do it ever again, that's fine. At least you tried. Okay, make great sacrifices. What are you going to give up? What are you going to say, you know what, I don't need this anymore. This is hindering my zeal. This is hindering my progress towards Christ. What am I going to give up? I think that's the hardest one to think about, right? Because that part of that involves admitting you have a problem with something as well. And so it's sort of a double whammy. Something I enjoy, but I'm going to give it up. And I probably shouldn't have enjoyed it in the first place. So there's a lot of stuff there. Eight, enjoy great memories. Okay? I will cherish. We stopped in Asheville on the way to my brother's wedding, and Alex just kept asking, can I take a picture? Can I take a picture? I said, take a picture with your brain. You don't need to take a picture because, one, you're never going to look at it because it's on mom's phone. And two, you will remember more if you're not looking at it through this as you're going and taking a panoramic picture, right? So same idea here. Enjoy the moments. What are you gonna decide that is important to you that you're going to notice? And then empower great people. Who are you going to equip? Who are you going to help be better? Because all of us are getting older, right? The song, you're older now than you've ever been, and now you're even older, and now you're even older. And so it's true. You're older every moment. So who are we preparing to be better than us, right? The old kung fu, the student has passed the master, right? When you snatch the pebble from my hand, all that stuff. So same thing. And then number 10, it goes without saying, develop great habits. Make a plan to do something every day. Every day, I'm going to wake up, and before I get out of bed or touch my phone and check Facebook, I'm going to say five things I'm thankful for. There's research that says that is one of the best ways to start your day because it gets you out of that funk of self-loathing and doubt, and I don't want to get up, I don't want to be awake, and it pushes you into a thankful mindset that you can usually keep throughout the day, and it's a good habit to do. So what do you think? We got about a minute left. Does everybody already have somewhere where they're going to fill this out and then put it somewhere? Or if you don't even want to fill it out all the way, just fill out a couple of them. Don't even go to 10. 10's like extra credit. Shoot for some of it, and if you get all of it, good for you. I'll give you a gold star. And then put it somewhere you can see it. And then if you want another one, I can print you more, okay? So, anybody questions or comments? Because we got 26 seconds. Make it fast if you want to. Okay, thanks, guys. Yeah, like I said, if you do want more copies of this, like you want to have two or three copies, there's extras in the back, and I'll totally print you more if you want. And then Sunday will be our last class, and we will move on to next quarter is Travis. Is it you, Travis and Jim are going to do a class about worship. That was written by a fairly well-known author in this room. Travis wrote the book. So thanks a lot, guys. See you on Sunday.